You're listening to the Geek Legacy Escape Pod.
The crew coming together and gelling and becoming this, like, you know, intergalactic family that we know and love.
And wacky mayhem ensues.
It just feels like they're trying so hard to capture the fans of the original series.
Yeah, that was hot garbage.
He just got, like, weird, like, creepy uncle weird.
That was a bold choice.
Yeah, I had fun with it.
That's true. It was the 80s.
It must be so bad that they just never rewrite.
You won't make it in the future, do you?
I don't think so, no.
I am not a Tosh ER fan. That's probably the nicest thing I will say.
That is absolutely perfect way to describe it.
Yeah.
Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Geek Legacy's Escape Pod. I believe this is episode number 10, where we take a weekly dive into the vast pool that is Star Trek The Next Generation. We are rewatching the show from scratch, and we are still in the first season, which is going to take us a long-ass time to get through at this rate. we're going to rate it. We're going to have a good time with it. With me this fine evening is Mr. David Edmondson. How you doing, sir?
I'm fantastic. This episode made me want to send, bouquets of, like, edible arrangements to you guys for suggesting this concept of watching all the Next Generation episodes.
I like those ones that have, like, the little, like, strawberries and pineapple and stuff like that that are cut to look like flowers. I'll take that.
All right.
All right. And Mr. Justin Cavender, how are you doing this evening?
I am fabulous. Once this episode was behind me, I felt a billion times better.
Yeah, did you just watch it today? Or
I did. I did. I watched it. No, I take that back. I watched it last night. I did my homework early.
Yeah, I did too. I watched it last night. And because I got the message early in the day that this was going to be a bad episode, or somebody's estimation of a bad episode. I'm intentionally not saying who sent that message,
but it probably made it better for you. You knew what to expect.
Well, it set the bar low, so I went into it going like, "Oh my god, I couldn't sleep." It was one of those things I couldn't sleep. It was late last night. I got up out of bed, you know, and I'm like, "I got to be at work in a few hours, but do I want to wait and watch Star Trek just before we record the podcast, or do I just want to get it out of the way right now?" Mm-hmm. So it was one of those middle of the night viewings, and maybe I was feeling a little bit more favorable because of that. So this week's episode is called Haven, and it originally aired on November 28th, 1987. It is the 10th episode of the first season, and the little blurb on IMDb is, "While on a mission to a planet called Haven, Counselor Troi meets her husband-to-be, a marriage arranged by her father years before. As the Enterprise encounters a ship far deadlier than any combat could provide." So, last week when I read that out, I'm like, what does that even mean about a ship more deadly than a combat could provide? It's a plague ship carrying a dead race with only 8 survivors, and anybody that comes in contact with them is going to die. But we'll get there. We'll get to that. So that's immediately right off the bat what that means. So
we'll slowly get to that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe we won't, because we were talking about before we started recording this one, how, like, yeah, this is going to be like a 30-second episode, because I feel like there's not a whole lot to say about it. But who knows? Maybe we'll discover that there's more under the surface.
I mean, I think right off the bat, can we agree that Luxana Troi is one of the least likable characters in the history of television?
Oh, mm-hmm. I adore her. I think she's fantastic. I think she's a lot of fun. Okay, now I don't think she's a good character, or I don't think she's a good person. I think she's an interesting character because she likes making people uncomfortable. Because, I mean, when you're a mind reader and you have a longer than human lifespan, you know, and what do you do for fun? When you've already read everybody's mind, you already know what they're thinking, what do you do for fun? You're going to put subversive thoughts in their head. You're going to say some shit that they're not expecting to hear, and then you're going to mentally hear them scramble, you know, and try to figure out how to conduct themselves or what to say. So I think she enjoys putting people in uncomfortable situations, like Picard specifically. I mean, the moment she sets foot on the ship, she's ordering him around like a bellboy. You know, like, take my luggage. All right, you're clear to go. And, you know, just like, and he even, like, sits there like he's a bellhop. He just, like, bows to her and leaves the room when she's done with him, that kind of thing. And she'll just say, like, incredible shit in front of him, you know, like,
I guess I should be respectful. Her full title is Luxana Troi, daughter of the fifth house, holder of the sacred chalice of Rix, heir to the holy rings of Beta Zed.
Yes, which she totally touts in this episode as well, when she's trying to shut up the mother of the groom to be.
Beta sets live longer than humans?
I think I heard that somewhere. Now, again, this could be a classic case of misremembered Trek. And if that's the case, then forgive me. But it seems like just about all races live longer than humans, because we're like fucking toads of the universe, right? So maybe they don't, but they certainly have what I'm going to call a wisdom that's beyond our years.
120 year life expectancy. So yeah, okay. I would say they're older than humans.
Fair. Yeah. But they also do a lot of living. I mean, when you do have the abilities that they have, you probably mature a little bit faster. You kind of have to, I would imagine.
Sure. So,
well, and almost all Betazoids that we see, or at least members of that household, seem like sexually aggressive. You know, Loxana definitely is, and later Troy becomes, you know, pretty aggressive. And like, doesn't she date Worf at some point? And I know that's a big spoiler for the future, because this episode, and if you watch any of the stuff that happens late in the Star Trek Next Generation universe, she and Riker are a thing. But for a while, she was like banging around with I almost called him a Wookiee. He was banging around with a Klingon.
Yeah, there's no going back from that.
Yeah, I mean, I hear they got like barbed penises, so they like tear shit up.
The only place you go is to the doctor.
Yeah, you gotta get sewn up. Sorry, that took a dark turn. Yeah. So I mean, when they get to this planet called Haven, Picard, you know, goes off on some like dreamy diatribe about it, saying, you know, legends say that it mends souls and heals broken hearts, and then Data immediately calls him out on this bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, what a nothing burger the whole concept of Haven was. We never go down there. The episode's called Haven, but we get like two communications with the surface. One saying, "Hey, welcome here. There's a ship coming." And one saying, "Like, you have to destroy this ship. It's going to ruin Haven." And then the aliens talk about wanting to go down to Haven to like take like an island on its own. But then in the end, they just beam over the dude that was going to marry Troy, and they're like, "Well, we'll just keep going."
Yeah. Well, it sounded like they had every intention of continuing down to the planet, or were they just going to go off elsewhere and fuck off and die?
I think they were just going to go fuck off and die.
I mean, they wanted to just go where no other residents live. They just wanted to live out the rest of their days there.
Right, right. Yeah, they weren't drawn to the planet because of the fact that it had these mystic healing abilities, supposedly.
Yeah, I was under the impression that that's what they were going to do, was like the planet did have healing properties, but now you got me questioning that. Like, I didn't remember that correctly, but I thought there was something magical about Haven, and that is why they wanted to go there.
Yeah, so well, at the end, Wyatt convinces the Trelians to leave Haven and search for help elsewhere. So they don't go down to Haven at all.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I was under the impression that in the ship's logs, it was like, yes, but you're having a bad day. Go to Haven and they will fix you. But maybe, well, I think I'm wrong.
So I think that's what the Trelians thought was going to happen. And maybe they set their course there. And over the years, it took them to actually reach there from their diseased, plagued homeworld. You know, crew members are dying off to where there's only eight left. They're like, if we can get there, maybe we can heal up. But ultimately, it was just like some sort of cosmic connection or whatever to get them in the same time and same place as this. What was
doctor dude?
Wyatt.
Yeah.
Wyatt. Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Mullet. It was just to try to get him in the same place with the lady on the ship that apparently they've been drawing each other since they were children. And they were like always destined to meet. They've kind of got that force link thing going on, like Rey and Kylo Ren did in The Last Jedi, to where they've kind of been seeing each other in some sort of way. So when Wyatt first appears on the Enterprise and meets Counselor Troy for the first time, you know, his wife to be in an arranged marriage, he's all of a sudden like, not like disgusted, but disappointed, because it's not this visage of a blonde Amazonian woman that he's been seeing in his head since he was a child. He was assuming he had been seeing her because that was like her getting in his head because they were arranged to be married, but instead it was some weird Trelian thing. And he just so happens to be a medical doctor, and they happen to be a plagued race. So, you know, he kind of turns his back on the arranged marriage, and jumping ahead to the end of the episode, like David was saying, he just decides to against everybody's suggestions and orders, beams over to the plagued ship with some medical supplies and intends to live out the rest of his own days with them. They're all going to die. Yeah.
Question. Did he want to become a doctor to heal people because of his connection with this woman? Was he drawn on a cosmic level?
He thinks that person's Troy, so I don't think he didn't think it was a Trillian.
Yeah.
No. Okay. I guess my question is: do you think that he was inspired to become a doctor and heal people because of maybe this connection that he had with her in some weird way?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I think that would be speculation at best because, yeah, like David
was saying. It's just coincidence that, I'm a doctor.
It's coincidence. Like, he thinks that he's going to be meeting Deanna Troi and marrying her, and everything's going to be hunky-dory, and they're going to have, like, 12 kids and a cat. But when he actually finds out who this person is that he's been drawing, and it's somebody that is literally dying, and he can put all these skills and training that he's been spending his life studying towards, you know, can put it to use. It just is a great coincidence. So, I think maybe it planted a bug in his head that he didn't know why he wanted to study medicine, but ultimately that's the universe's way of bringing them together if you believe in fate and that kind of stuff.
Right. That's what I was getting at. Like, I feel like that this is a perfect example of the universe on a cosmic level is mm-hmm. bringing these two people together. He has dedicated his life to medicine. She is deathly ill. And yeah. Now they can have a life together, and he can fix her and her people.
So we don't really know much about the Trillians, but we know that Wyatt is a human, right? Because it's been stated many times that it's a human marrying a Betazoid, and that was a thing that was going to be happening in terms of traditions and everything, right, for the wedding. But maybe the Trillians have some sort of way to, like, it's like an intergalactic dating app where they will match with somebody across the universe, and it is their mission to, like, I will travel until I find this person and make them mine, kind of thing. And I wonder if that's some sort of, like, mental connection, emotional connection that is projected over space and time, you know, so that it's not fate. I don't think anything in Star Trek would be based on fate. I think it would be based on some sort of innate racial ability, for them to be able to get in each other's heads.
Yeah. I don't know the answer. Does this whole series take place in the Milky Way galaxy? I know we always hear, like, Alpha Quadrant and Gamma Quadrant and Beta Quadrant. Is that our galaxy? Does Star Trek take place in our galaxy? I feel like an idiot for not knowing the answer to this.
I mean, other than the fact that I know Earth isn't close, but it's around, I'm going to say, I'm pretty ignorant as far as that goes too.
It is our galaxy, yes.
Okay, because that was the whole thing when, like, when that one guy that came over and made their ship faster. Yeah, yeah, they actually went to two galaxies away, which isn't something that we've ever been able to do. And obviously, we don't have fucking starships anyway. But you get the idea. It's going two galaxies away sounds like something that could never in a billion years be done.
Now, I am by no means any kind of, like, scientist, so I have nothing to back this up other than the fact that while galaxies are, yes, very large, I don't think all of Star Trek takes place in the Milky Way. For example, I think several galaxies make up a quadrant. Oh. You know? So,
we need to find a fan site that can explain this shit better than we know. Because I don't know. I always have the impression that it was our galaxy, and it's just really big. And so
I think if you're looking at it as a single galaxy, you're looking at it too small. I think it's a lot bigger than that. Because when you can travel at warp speed, you can get from one end of the galaxy to the other fairly quickly.
Right,
but because if you look at the Milky Way, it's long. It's like a skid mark, right? You know, if you're going through it long ways, it's like driving through Texas in its widest part. If you're going through it sideways, it's like driving through the top part of Texas that sticks up. You know, you can travel through it a lot quicker. And that, sorry for anybody that's not based in the U.S. I'm giving you a very United States analogy, but
I think it's so funny that we know jack shit about space. I bet there's somebody out there that's listening to this that's just cringing and biting their pillow because they're so angry at the way we're trying to explain this. Sorry.
Yeah, I have made many people bite their pillow in anger. Maybe shout into it, try to suffocate themselves, you know.
Okay, so I'm sorry, continue.
I don't know if I had anywhere to go with that, but
So Star Trek is set almost entirely in our Milky Way galaxy. Earth was in the Alpha Quadrant, so it sounds like the vast majority of everything we see in Star Trek is in the Milky Way galaxy. However, there are occurrences that take place outside of our galaxy, but all four of the quadrants are in the Milky Way. The four quadrants that we traditionally associate with Star Trek.
So,
I mean, according to one guy posting, because I was able to find a map, because I was looking for a map, because I'd seen a map a long time ago of like the quadrants and stuff like that. So I wanted to see if like it had a bunch of galaxies, but it didn't look like it was.
Okay.
Well, thank you for that.
I will defer to the wisdom of random dude on the internet. I'm sure that's probably right. Fine.
He knows more than I do.
Right. I mean, there's an actual map that he doodled. It's already a step further in terms of reference and research than I've done. But so I don't know. I'll be content to stay open on that. Maybe listeners can feel free to chime in and correct us on you know how big what universes are involved in Star Trek or what galaxies are involved in the Star Trek universe.
So if you think of like the Milky Way galaxy, you know, your typical spiral, the very very bottom is where we are, is Earth. You know, Earth is in the Alpha Quadrant, near where the Beta Quadrant is. It's at the very, very bottom. When Voyager was shot 75,000 light years, you know, away from us, you know, it was shot up to the top right of the Gamma Quadrant or the Delta Quadrant.
It was only 75,000 light years.
75,000 light years, because they go the speed of light, I guess, and it was going to take them 75 years.
Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know science.
Yeah.
Believe whatever you tell me.
The Romulans and Klingons are in the Beta Quadrant. You know, most of the Federation planets are in the Alpha Quadrant. The Dominion is in the Gamma Quadrant, and the Borg is in the Delta Quadrant.
Ooh, okay. So there are four quadrants in the Milky Way galaxy.
Correct. In the land of Star Trek.
Right in the now, land of it's amazing. Oz.
There's someone in their car just screaming at their radio, like, what are they talking about?
Again, we apologize. We're noobs. We haven't been to space, so we are not experts. I apologize.
I mean, I've been to space.
Can we change the topic and talk about Riker watching like holographic porn?
Yeah, that was great. Where they're playing their little instruments. Yeah,
they're playing their little harps and their little like silver and gold outfits. And at first, I thought he had like
yes,
I was gonna say paid entertainers in his room, but then they turn out to be like 2 feet tall and like holographically generated, and I'm like, right. That's Sly Dog. And then okay, so when he leaves the room and he goes to turn it off, he has like an old-fashioned TV remote in his hand. You know, it's like an actual remote control. Where anywhere later in the production of Star Trek, I have a feeling that it would say something like, you know, computer stop hologram or something like that.
Right.
It would be a voice command, or like he would wave his hand and it would go away or something like that. But he had like a little fucking clicker. You might as well be using the clapper, you know? Just like he just clicked it and then left the room. But just that smile on his face as he was leaning back in his chair watching those ladies play the harp.
From like 4 feet away, too. He was like ridiculously close. Yes.
Right, and at any moment in time, it wouldn't have felt out of place if he just got stone faced and he'd be like, "All right, now kiss her," you know. He just started like giving them orders and shit, you know.
Enough of this instrument play. Let's let's go to phase two.
Yeah, execute phase two.
I love Riker. It just goes to show how much I love Riker that much more.
I like Data in this episode where like they're all bickering. Data was just here for it. He just just loved the human interaction of them, just making asses of themselves. He just kept like walking around like ear to ear smiling.
Totally, he's like that gif of Michael Jackson eating popcorn in Thriller. Like he's just like all like ready for the comments. That was great.
Yeah, and it's important to note. I know I was bitching about Laxana Troi, but you know, Michelle Barrett, who plays her, you know, she was Gene Roddenberry's wife. And, you know, she was the original Nurse Chapel in the original series. She was the original, the unnamed number one from the original pilot. You know, she's the voice of the computer in pretty much every incarnation of Star Trek.
Computer, do we have another beryllium sphere on board?
Exactly, that's her. So she is very important to the Star Trek world. So I wanted to make sure people were understanding I was berating, that I was disliking this character immensely, not the actress.
Oh, yeah. I don't think anybody thought you meant the actress. But I wanted to talk about the Data being into watching the humans bickering. So when the families are disputing at the table, Riker storms off because, you know, he's still kind of wanting Troy to himself. So he's going to go sulk on the holodeck for a little while. And then Troy ends up storming out and asking them to stop their petty bickering. And Data's just sitting there, like, as much as Data can smile, he's sitting there like smiling. And then he awkwardly asks at the end, would you mind continuing your petty bickering? I find it intriguing. I just thought that was so fantastic.
Yeah, I loved it.
Such a great Data moment. And then I thought, before I realized that Riker was sulking on the holodeck, I thought maybe he had gone down to the planet's surface. I'm like, oh, finally, we get to see what Haven looks like. It's like a perpetual sunset, you know, this like clearly shot in a soundstage exterior, just like all the other ones that they've done so far in this series. He's just sitting on a rock, and then you can clearly see the holodeck door appear when Troy comes in. But the weird thing I felt about this is he and Troy are having this great, like, romantic moment. They're talking about it and how, you know, he was previously, like, her Imzadi, which means beloved. And they were talking about, like, basically, Riker was kind of coming to terms or making peace with the fact that you know, if she's going to go off and marry this other guy, whatever plans he had in mind for her are just out the window. And they're kind of talking that through. And then in comes fucking, you know, Mullet Boy. Like, there are zero safety protocols or security protocols, I guess, or like a door chime or anything when any random person enters the holodeck.
Right. So I could have been whacking it in here.
Exactly. I'm like, holy shit, this guy just like strolls in. It's like, oh, hey, haircut, we were just talking about you, you know?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, you gotta be careful. I gotta put locks on those doors.
Seriously, I gotta put a bell on that guy.
I like that Riker left the dinner to be alone, and then Troy came in, and then White came. He's like, what the fuck? I just left this party.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, the party is, like,
though. If you'll excuse me again, I guess.
He is the party.
He is the party. You know what's great about this episode? No Tasha Yar.
No, that's not true at all.
She was in it a lot.
She was in it. She even gets her hair all done up for the wedding and everything.
Have I officially gone Yar blind?
She was the welcoming committee. Yeah, she was like,
oh, man.
Yeah, she had. There's a couple awkward exchanges she had, mostly like in the transporter room, I feel like. But before we leave the holodeck scene, I wanted to point something out and to see if you guys caught it. Did you hear, other than that like other language pet name kind of Imzadi thing that Troy was calling Riker? Did you hear what name she used to refer to him when she was talking to Wyatt in there in the holodeck?
I don't think so.
She called him Bill, not Will, not William, not Riker. She called him Bill.
Oh yeah, I think I remember that now. Yeah.
And I heard that, and I rewound it. I turned on the captions, and it straight up says Bill.
Yeah, she's called him it a couple times in the show.
I just picked up on that.
It seems to be when she wants to, like, look, I don't want to talk to. I don't want to talk to the first officer. I need to talk to the dude that I used to bang.
Right.
I need to talk to my friend Bill.
Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, later in the series, she definitely doesn't call him that. I remember, I pretty clearly, and this could be a total Mandela effect, but I pretty clearly remember her calling him Will, not Bill. But that caught me way off guard in this episode. Like, what the fuck, you know? Just like whenever I hear somebody refer to William Shatner as Bill, that's just weird to me.
Call him Willie Shack.
I don't know. But maybe that's even what it's referenced to. Maybe they named his character after William Shatner. I don't know. Could be. But yeah. That threw me off. You guys want to go any deeper into this episode, or you want to just dive into the rating?
Yeah, real quick. The lady that was on Haven that was having the communication, she has sort of the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon behind her. You know, it's got those crazy ones. She was actually in the 2009 Star Trek movie. She was a Vulcan Council member. Her name is Anna Katerina. And then the tall guy that was hanging out with Luxana, he is Lurch from Adam's Family.
Yeah, Lurch was getting drunk in the back while the family were bickering. Yeah,
I was like, who's this Lurch-looking motherfucker? I'm like, it is Lurch.
I mean, you got a good tall, lanky dude with like very gaunt-looking facial bone structure, and there's only one person that could be. It's got to be Lurch.
Yeah, his name is Carol Strukian, I think is his name. Carol Strukian. Yeah, he's from the Netherlands.
Oh, cool. He doesn't seem to talk much in his roles.
No,
he's more like the hired help, the goon, the muscle, the intimidation.
Yeah. He was just in something in 2021, The Elden Theory. He plays the Stranger. And he was in Dr. Sleep. He was Grandpa Flick. And I don't know if you guys have seen Dr. Sleep, but it is a pretty goddamn crazy sequel to The Shining. And it's with Ian McGregor, and it's actually really fucking good. And it's directed by Mike Flanagan, and that guy knows how to tell a story. He's the one that did, like... The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. I don't know if you guys saw that, but he's a pretty goddamn good filmmaker. And if you have any interest in The Shining or you want to expand on the lore, then check that out. Check out Dr. Sleep.
I second that. I thought it was fantastic. All right. Without any further ado, let's dive into our ratings. Usually I save myself for last so I can be the tiebreaker if need be, but I am going to volunteer as tribute to go first this time. Now, even though there were a lot of things that I did enjoy about this episode, and I don't find Loxana Troi nearly as off-putting as you guys do, I'm still going to give it an overall nay. just for rewatchability factor. It's one of those things. It was interesting. It was kind of cool, but it wasn't like it didn't feel like a great episode to me.
I agree 100%. I am a nay. In fact, in the event that I ever rewatch this series, I am skipping all the nay episodes. Throwing that out there, and this will be skipped in the future.
Yeah, it's a perfect 3 for 3. I found Loxana Troi just wholly unlikable, and I thought, you know, there's a clear A plot and a B plot, and I thought neither one had a satisfactory conclusion, and both of them were just kind of left hanging there. You know, we had the A plot of the marriage, we had the B plot of the Trillians, and it seemed like they just merged the two plots and then decided we weren't going to have a decent resolution for either one of them. Mm-hmm. And normally there's enough Riker for me to at least have fun during the episode, but this one he was all moody because, you know, the chick that he really wants to be with, even if he won't admit it, is you know, gonna go off and bang some dude named Wyatt. No one wants to lose their chick to a Wyatt. No offense to all the Wyatts out there, I guess.
Like Wyatt Earp, he's a badass,
right?
So I stand corrected. Like 140 years ago, there was
Wyatt Russell. He's pretty good. He was that Captain America, you know.
Yeah, also about that piece of shit U.S. agent too.
the U.S. Patriot. It's definitely an A for me. I found some minor joy in the data interactions of it all, but outside of that, you know, I was kind of like meh.
So yeah, this week's episode that was rated 6.3. Okay. 6.3.
That's not good.
Yeah, the next one is 7.3, so it's going to be a whole 1 point higher. Sweet. And it's called The Big Goodbye. And the blurb for that one is, Captain Picard and some of his crew are caught in a deadly trap on the holodeck as a result of a ship-wide scan from an alien race. And the little thumbnail that I can see of it looks like it's set in the 40s, so maybe, just maybe, this will be the first time that we see kind of like that whole noir private detective kind of feel that we have seen in later seasons in the holodeck. It kind of has a recurring element, so maybe we get our first taste of it, but I'm looking forward to it. I have a lot of fun with those ones.
Cool. So the Tyrellians, they're the Plague Race people?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it would have been cool if they had their own episode and they were sort of deemed as like planet killers or something like that, and everyone thought that they were going to be this horrible race and they're ready for battle and on red alert. But then when they have a conversation with them and they find out that, you know, they're not really killers, they just, you know, are fucking COVID spreaders, and they have to have, you know, they have to figure out what are they going to do, and it's a race against time. They have this moral question: do we blow this ship up and be done with them, and they don't have to worry about them infecting any more people, or do we let them, you know, live out the rest of their days? You know, like sort of just have this sort of this moral quandary. Like, what do we do? I think that would have been a much better episode than this.
I agree, and I like the way that you're kind of like doing the whole revisionist Star Trek history, like rewriting these episodes. Because if that were the episode that we, yeah, if that were the episode that we saw, it there was a strong chance it would have got a yay, you know, unless it heavily weighed on Wesley Crusher to fix the problem or something like
right.
that.
Right. Oh yeah, all I need is take the two baby aspirin and, you know, fucking call me in the morning. They'll be great.
Exactly. No, I think that'd be fantastic. If Haven was a planet that was uninhabited and they were like kind of going there to live out the rest of their days and maybe see if they could find like the fountain of youth or whatever, the fountain of healing all your shit.
The fountain of cures.
Yeah, exactly. If we're going to, you know, if we learn that as we come, all of a sudden we see this ship coming and they can't make contact with it for whatever reason. They know it's from this race of, like you said, planet killers. And, you know, they're about ready because they just cannot communicate with them. They're about ready to hit the fire button. And finally they establish communication. They hear their sob story that, you know, yeah, we're the only survivors. And yes, we have this thing and we're all condemned to die. We just want to do it in a place where we can just do it safely and by ourselves. And but then it opens the question, well, if we let them down there on the planet, and then if anybody else finds them, they're going to contract it and take it back to whatever planet they're from. Like, these people are moving liabilities. We have the ability to take them out of the equation and then save, I was going to say humanity, but save just life in general throughout the universe by taking these people out of it. What do we do? You know, what would the Prime Directive have us do?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question, right?
Yeah, like
that would be scary. Do they blow them up? Maybe they do. And then, yeah. I mean, one of the most powerful things in Battlestar Galactica, you remember in the miniseries before it kicked off everything, there's the people that don't have the FTL drives and they get left behind. And there's that right. shot of that little kid playing with their doll. And you're like, this kid and everyone on the ship is just totally fucked.
Yeah.
And it's hard to watch. It's pretty gnarly because everyone else is on this, you know, this mission for survival of the species, and they have to leave these people behind. And I right. think that was a pretty hard decision to make. And so I think that with the Federation comes great responsibility. And I don't think that we have yet seen them have to answer any of these questions or have any kind of accountability. And I think that, I mean, you guys watch Star Trek Discovery, and maybe, you know, fast forward to 2021, they are having to deal with these tough issues, because as of right now, the Federation that I know from TNG hasn't had to answer for anything or make any decisions.
Right. The Federation's a very different place in the Star Trek landscape of Discovery. It's not as utopian and idyllic as it has been in a lot of these more traditional Star Trek series. And between Discovery and Picard, it's not the Federation that we know at all. So it's interesting. And I expect those shows, because they are modern, they're being kind of done through a more modern critical lens, I do expect them to ask more of those hard questions. This in particular, since it is kind of a remnant, you know, a throwback to its 60s heritage, and then, you know, somewhat reinvented or redesigned for the 80s, I don't expect it to go in anything real deep yet. But I know there are episodes that go there later. They may not go as deep as stuff does, you know, more modern stuff does now, but they'll get there. Right now, it's all a bunch of fluff and fun and some small moral quandaries, but I don't think we're going to get to the heavy anytime soon.
I'm ready for it, Randy.
Yeah. Yeah, we might have to wait till we see the Borg for that.
Episode 212.
Yeah. So, So yeah, that's what we got. That's what we got to look forward to. And for everybody keeping track at home, that is a grand total of 7 nays and 3 yays for these first 10 episodes. And, you know, let's see how it pans out as we continue to just plug our way through this first season of Star Trek The Next Generation. On behalf of all of us here at Geek Legacy's Escape Pod, I want to thank you for listening. And if you get a chance, listen to our mothership podcast, the Geek Legacy Podcast, to listen to us yak about just all things geek. If you aren't just into the Trek, you'll hear us do a lot of Star Wars talking over there. But yeah, that's about it. And we're going to fire some phasers at you next week. So you better be here. But don't move around too much. I'm not a good aim.
Pew pew!